Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elving.
And I am Ken Rudin.
And we are finally at the brink of the final hours, the exciting moments at the end of the last days of the weeks.
Of the podcast?
I just don't see how this thing can go on any longer, and yet it continues.
Wait a second. Let me tell the listener that right now Ron Elving had his eyes closed as if this were going on too long. Can I say, as a political junkie and somebody who loves politics...
Not long enough.
No. Well, not long enough, but...
Let's play two.
We complained about 2000, 2004 that it was over immediately. Iowa, New Hampshire
was
over.
It was too soon. This is going on too long.
No.
There's got to be a golden mean in there. Maybe just 6 or 8 or 10 months would
Montana,
be enough.
Are you saying that Montana, South Dakota, Kentucky, Oregon and Puerto Rico should not have a say in this?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying they should be silenced. I think that all of those states should, in fact, be pushed out of the union immediately. No, of course that's not what I'm saying. Of course those people get to have something to say about it, and that will be in November. But lots and lots and lots of states in the past have not gotten to be crucial primary states.
But they all have now. That's great.
No. Many of the states are still not crucial. There's nothing particularly crucial about Montana and South Dakota on June 3rd.
Come on, Montana would be a beaut.
Nobody expects those particular primaries to be all that important. All the states have had a chance to vote, and now we are down to obsessing about the size of the margin in a state the size of West Virginia. And we are spending days and days talking about it, nighttime and daytime. Can't get it out of our minds.
Wasn't West Virginia important?
To West Virginia. And to Hillary Clinton, because it gave her the opportunity to win one more big victory, and it was a whopper, 40 percentage points.
With cheese.
And so the whole thing has to go on for another 3-4 weeks.
And it sends another signal that perhaps Barack Obama has problems with certain constituencies.
No, not perhaps. And it isn't the first signal.
And that's why West Virginia was important. And that's why
knew that, and we're going to see it again in every single poll.
But so if this ended like early, like Super Tuesday, as a lot of people thought, as the Hillary Clinton campaign thought.
Your argument is what they call the parade of horribles. You say if it's gone on too long now, maybe it should have ended right at the beginning.
But I'm saying we need to know these things about these candidates. We need to see the warts and all, which we wouldn't have seen had it ended early.
How many new warts have you seen in the last month?
Well,
I want a brand new fresh wart on each candidate.
Okay, well, there's the Academy.
Okay.
The Academy Award. Or the guy from Wagon Train.
There had been a very small group of people who thought that even after winning West Virginia, if she won it big, if she really got a big positive shot out of that state, that Hillary Clinton might choose that moment to go out on a high note and actually leave the campaign after West Virginia. Well, here's what she had to say on that subject on Tuesday night.
With your help, I am ready to go head-to-head with John McCain to put our vision for America... up against the one he shares with President Bush. Now, I believe our party is strong enough for this challenge. I am strong enough for it. You know I never give up. I'll keep coming back, and I'll stand with you as long as you stand with me.
What we learned in West Virginia, as we learned in Pennsylvania, was that, yes, she won big. She won, like, not between 9 and 10 points in Pennsylvania. She won a huge blowout in West Virginia. However, her prospects of winning the nomination, they're just not there. It's the math. It's the flood of delegates, superdelegates, just came steadily towards Barack Obama. So even if, as he shows serious weakness with Democratic votes that Hillary Clinton would love to assemble to run against John McCain, it's still Barack Obama's nomination.
And Terry McAuliffe, who is the chairman of Hillary Clinton's campaign and has become pretty much the one surrogate who's appearing all over the media, went out Wednesday morning with the evidence of West Virginia and did everything he could to resuscitate the chances that most of us in the media can't see for Hillary Clinton.
You had that rare tape of him that not many people heard.
This, I thought, was his strongest argument.
There's a big difference between mostly dead and all dead. Mostly dead is slightly alive. Now, all dead, well, with all dead, there's usually only one thing that you can do.
What's that?
Go through his clothes and look for loose change.
Actually, that was, of course, Billy Crystal as Miracle Max in The Princess Bride.
You know,
that was not Terry McAuliffe.
It was not.
No, and it was not the chairman of the Hillary
talking
campaign.
Talking about
and
Hillary.
And he was
Clinton.
Not talking about Hillary.
No. But is her campaign dead?
Her campaign is not dead, and her bid for the presidency, in a sense, is not dead. What is not possible is for the mathematics of this whole situation to be revoked. what would have to happen would be for all these superdelegates who have been moving steadily to Obama so that he now has a lead among superdelegates after having trailed forever. And now he has a lead. So when we look at the pledged delegate total and we say he has this much of a lead, then we add superdelegates to it instead of subtracting from it as we had done throughout this entire process. So when you look at that math, something has to happen to reverse that. And what she is asking people to do is to imagine her at the top of the ticket in November running against John McCain, debating John McCain in October, putting together her base of voters plus what she would assume would be Barack Obama's voters staying loyal to the Democrats and voting for her. And that, to her, makes a better appeal, makes a better package, makes sense. But that doesn't reverse the psychology that the superdelegates who are moving to Obama are looking
at. And I think that's why the John Edwards endorsement particularly hurts, because it really, it stepped on her message. She was in the middle of interviews with network folks, the cable guys, talking about, you know, how she planned to win the nomination, how she's going to beat John
McCain.
And
making a strong case.
Right. Well, Pennsylvania and West Virginia, and you will probably see that again in Kentucky next week as well. But here, again, you have the specter of a John Edwards coming forth and saying that, look, the American people have spoken, which is interesting, and they've endorsed Barack Obama, and so have I.
What if John Edwards had come out and said, I'm going to endorse Hillary Clinton because I think she's right. She is a better candidate for the full spectrum of all the Democrats, and I'm going to try to get my 19 remaining delegates to vote for her, which would be a 19-delegate clean net gain for her, which would be better than what she got from Pennsylvania or Ohio or West Virginia. That would have been a little bit upsetting, I think, to the Obama forces.
Yeah, I think both would have been very strange, because had he done that, you say, why is he losing his senses given the fact that everybody else is moving towards Obama? But I was a little also, I have to admit, a little unnerved. Why did he need to do that? If everybody feels that this race is all but over, if we all feel that Hillary Clinton's campaign ends whatever, June 3rd, let's say June 3rd, June 4th, why did John Edwards have to basically say, look, it's over, you should get out?
Well, I think part of his thinking and the Obama thinking might have been this is a good time to have Edwards come out, not just to upstage her on one given day, the day after West Virginia when she had a good story to tell on all the networks. Not only that, although that was valuable to them, bigger for them was to deny her what might have been a life preserver. Here was one more thing that she could hold out the prospect of happening, and they took it away. If they could take away Puerto Rico, they would take away Puerto Rico. If they could take away the prospect of Michigan and Florida eventually getting full delegations seated with big majorities for her, they would do that too. But this was one they could take away from her, and they did it.
Now, speaking of Michigan and Florida, I mean, I don't think it has the drama as it used to have. I think obviously there's a trial balloon in Michigan that would award her 10 more delegates than Obama, and perhaps the same number thereabouts in Florida. So all that angst that we've been going through for so many months about what to do with Michigan, what to do with Florida, that may be resolved pretty soon.
That could happen, or it could be a deal. But I think if there's a deal, it signals that Hillary Clinton really has accepted this math and that she really isn't going to keep contesting the thing. And since I don't feel that yet from her campaign, I suspect that they're going to push off this deal right up to that May 31st meeting of the committee that'll decide whether or not to seat these delegations.
You know, the condescending question everybody used to ask about Jesse Jackson, and it was, what does Jesse want? That was mm-hmm. But here's a similar question. What does Hillary Clinton want? What does she need to get out of all this?
And does she even know? Because she has been so focused for so long on the goal, the prize, that I don't think she has a backup plan. I don't think she has a plan B, the other thing she would like to have out of 2008.
Do you think, there are silly, I think, talks about her being on the Obama ticket. Obviously, the Obama people are not big fans of Hillary Clinton. I think there's no chance in the world that she gets on the ticket. Do you think there's any indication that her campaign could push for that as, you know, the best deal they can get going into Denver?
If you want one simple explanation for why this whole thing is still going on, why we're still obsessing about it, it would be because the Clinton forces, having determined they can't have the top spot, want to be on the ticket in the number two spot, and that they are staying in until Barack Obama offers it to her, which he, of course, does not want to do. I agree with you. But as long as he doesn't, they're staying in there and making life as difficult for him and for the rest of the Democrats as they possibly can. So that would be a simple explanation. I'm not sure that's it. I think it's also possible that she just has not quite accepted this yet and still is looking for any kind of problem that could emerge for Barack Obama, anything that might somehow bring him down in the next several weeks, turn around this energy, and make monkeys out of all the rest of us. Other candidates running for president, a new one this past week, making it official, Bob Barr, former Republican congressman from Georgia, has announced as a candidate in the Libertarian Party, which will be choosing its nominee with you on hand, I believe, Ken, just next week.
In Denver, Colorado, and the nomination will be announced on May 25th, a Sunday. What's interesting, a lot of us thought Ron Paul, with all the millions of dollars he raised and the millions of dollars he still...
30-some million dollars.
Spent 27, though. I don't know where he could have spent.
Where? Where did he spend? Not on television.
No, but I do know that I think several of our reporters noticed this when they were traveling through Pennsylvania during the primary. Wherever they went, they saw Ron Paul lawn signs everywhere, road signs.
$27 million worth of lawn signs. Well, hard to imagine.
Well,
it's a very nice website.
But obviously, he was on Talk of the Nation this week, and we asked him if he's going to endorse McCain. He said he will not. He will not endorse McCain, but he also said he will definitely not be on the ballot in November as a third party, fourth party, you know.
Instead, we have Bob Barr, who, interestingly, is not only a former Republican, but was well known for several positions that I would think would be anathema to the Libertarian Party, including a very strong objection to legalized medical marijuana,
right,
and also his very strong campaign against same-sex marriage. Both of those things will be unpopular with at least some of the libertarians at that convention in Denver.
Right, and I think one difference, of course, between Ron Paul now and Ron Paul in 1988 is in 88 he was out of office. He had run for the Senate in 84, so he was out of Congress. Bob Barr finds himself also out of Congress, having lost in 2002 in the primary in Georgia. But the question is, what can he do? I mean, obviously, for Bob Barr to duplicate or replicate whatever support Ron Paul has, he's going to have to get his internet folks up, and it doesn't look like that's going to happen at all.
Doesn't seem that that's his mentality.
So the thought of him becoming the
Ralph Nader of the right?
Yeah.
Well, I think that's a fantasy. I don't think that Bob Barr is going to have anything like the appeal to the imagination of the average conservative that Ralph Nader, at one time at least, had among liberals. And here's another interesting person on the fringe of the Republican universe, somebody who has supported John McCain, endorsed him. McCain asked for his endorsement. And some people, especially Democrats, have been trying to make him into the Jeremiah Wright of the right, and his name is John Hagee.
Oh, I thought you were talking about George W. Bush.
The televangelist from Texas, not the president from Texas. And John Hagee has made many, many incendiary remarks in his sermons
about
over the
Catholics,
years.
About Catholics, about Jews, about gays.
Especially about gays recently, and the Hurricane Katrina being linked to God's judgment against gays in New Orleans.
And the Roman Catholic Church and the whores.
And that's probably the one that he knew was the most problematic for John McCain, who has really tried very hard now to distance himself from this endorsement. And that he just apologized for this
past
week.
Well, he regretted. He said he regretted saying that. I don't know if that's an apology. Yeah, it might be, but...
It seemed good enough as an apology for the Catholic League, which is only one particular Catholic organization.
Right.
And that one Catholic organization said they felt the issue was now closed. Is it? Will John Hagee be back? Will we see videotapes of John Hagee if such exist?
Well, for one, I think we would have seen them by now, and plus the fact that we also had the person involved with the Republican National Convention who had to resign because he's a lobbyist for Myanmar.
Doug Goodyear.
Right. And so
very prominent lobbyist, and one of his clients was the junta that runs Myanmar and, of course, has been denying people the aid that the world community is trying to send in.
So, I mean, we have focus, I mean, obviously because the Democratic race has been so captivating for all of us, but there are some people in perhaps John McCain's orbit that could be proved to be embarrassing or controversial as we begin to refocus on the McCain candidacy.
One other big political story this week, and this is one that Republicans would like to put behind them as soon as possible, is the result from the special election in the Northern Mississippi Congressional District, the first district of Mississippi, where the previous Republican occupant became a senator, Roger Wicker, and in vacating that seat then created an opening, and that was just filled this week in a special election.
Travis Childers, the Democrat, was interesting. He's a conservative Democrat. He's pro-life. He's pro-gun. He's a good old Mississippi boy, if I don't know if you can use that term anymore. But, I mean, when you think of the archetypical conservative Mississippi Democrat, that's Travis Childers. And yet the National Republican Congressional Committee tried to morph him into Nancy Pelosi or Barack Obama, tie him into them anyway. And I think voters saw through that they tried to do that with a Democrat in Louisiana special election on May 3rd. That failed also. And for the first time since 1974, the Watergate year, that the Republicans have lost three special elections to the Democrats. And there's a lot of finger-pointing, hand-wringing, wondering what strategy works. And again, when you have an unpopular president, an unpopular war, gasoline prices approaching, if not passing, $4 a gallon, you wonder what could the Republicans have said any differently.
But their strategy of trying to tie him to national Democratic figures, why isn't that as successful as it's been in the past? Is it partly because Nancy Pelosi isn't that well-known, isn't that much of a bête noire for Republicans around the country, especially in the South?
Well, what's interesting is that in Baton Rouge, which was Richard Baker, that's the Louisiana district where Richard Baker resigned, they tried to tie the Democrat Don Kaiser to Barack Obama.
And Jeremiah Wright.
Right.
And Nancy Pelosi.
But you know something? A lot of African Americans came out and voted in huge numbers in that district for a conservative Democrat. So you wonder if maybe perhaps the Bush name, the gasoline taxes name, the Republican name may be more toxic in some parts of the country than Obama, Pelosi, Democrats.
At least as we stand now in May of 2008, with many months yet to go till November and many changes yet to come. And that's it for this week's political podcast.
You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/elections.
I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
Join us again next week for a very special edition of It's All Politics from NPR.
What's that?
Ken, it will be our 100th podcast.
This will be a gala day.
A century of podcasts. I'm not going to miss it.
I'm not the kind of girl.